I think we should be live on the internet. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is Radio Edutalk. My name's John Johnson. I am, as usual, sitting in Glasgow, Scotland. It's a pleasant sunny evening tonight, and I am excited and delighted to have Athol McLaughlin here with me. Have I got the it's Mr. M on Twitter, so I sometimes I'm forgetting your second name. Good evening, Athol.
Good evening. Thank you for having me.
It's great. And we're going to get into, in a wee minute, talking about digital storytelling, and then maybe chat a wee bit about TeachMeet, which you've been doing some exciting stuff with recently. But before we start, maybe could you sort of introduce yourself, sort of your backstory, how you got to where you are and where you are at the moment?
Yeah, so I've been a teacher for the last 14 years, roughly. Worked in a few authorities in Edinburgh and Fife, currently in Eastern Bartonshire, Bears End training. And yeah, so I suppose talking tonight about digital storytelling, I've always had a kind of fascination with stories and a fascination with kind of filmmaking, and done a lot around sort of developing sort of filmmaking skills and animation skills in classrooms and using them for kind of ideal projects. And kind of a long running relationship with people. They're now called the Scottish Film Education. It used to be called Scotland on Screen, or Scottish Screen, and running kind of workshops with them and things like that. So yeah, I kind of, like many teachers, kind of drawn to things that I find interesting myself, and sort of sparking the passion that I've got with the kids as well, and using that to develop better learning and teaching and having fun in the classroom.
Brilliant. Where did you first, how did you first start this then? So normally there's not a whole lot of digital storytelling, or certainly a few years ago wasn't in college.
I suppose we started, going back to when I was in Donibristle playing in Fife, and I had a P7 class, and our topic was things that move. So the days of kind of fairly prescriptive topics, I kind of start looking at the stage partner going, what on earth are we going to do with this? So we kind of did the usual sort of KWL, what do you want to know about things that move? And, yeah, and you know, by the first hour, the class and myself were pretty bored with this. And I'd heard about local high school, Woodmill High in Dunfermline, and a teacher there called Jackie Poughton, an art teacher who'd been making animations, and we thought, they sound great, should we fancy doing that instead? So we phoned them up and went along to the high school and saw how they were doing it. They had a whole kind of bank of Emacs there, and which we didn't have the kind of technology for it. But anyway, we went back and made these very rough, very, very rough animations, but had loads of fun with it. And from there, it was a kind of a process of just learning the craft a bit better and just finding different ways into telling stories. So I suppose in many ways it's less about the digital part and it's more about the storytelling part, and bringing out kids speaking in their own voice and sharing their own stories, either through looking at, inspired by your topics and inspired by your learning, but also just kind of day-to-day stuff as well, daft stuff.
Yeah, I'm kind of interested in this idea that you started by going off-piste. Obviously then at that point you weren't thoroughly planned to start the topic, because you were planning things that move. Did you include that in the animation topic, or
it wasn't as joined up as that at all.
That's good to hear. I think that's good for everybody to hear, because I think following that sort of idea and following some momentarily excitement can be a good thing sometimes, you know.
I think we were excited by the application of doing something different, and it was the kind of technology, but it was also, I'm a big fan of making things in the classroom and kind of crafty stuff. So it was all 3D animation, and so we were animating. We had to go everything. We had about two classes and about, I don't know, 20 groups of animations.
Yeah,
and making very crude back sets out of cardboard, and using dolls and action men and Lego characters and anything the kids brought in. And we didn't really know ourselves; we hadn't done it before. And it really was a case of learning alongside each other about how these things worked, and having fun with mistakes and having a laugh with it. And some of them came out well, some of them were crazy, some of them were totally nuts. And yeah, they didn't last very long. They're probably the longest is about 6 seconds. Yep. From memory. There was no kind of soundtrack, there was no dialogue. It was literally, I've never made this connection before, but yeah, Things That Move, that's basically what it was.
Yeah.
But behind it, they had stories, they were telling narratives, they had storyboards, we had all the stuff behind it. And so it was that first step into the unknown, and that was the exciting bit with it, really. Yeah, it was great.
So what do you think the pupils, what sort of impact did this have on the pupils? What sort of things did they learn, maybe aside from the technology?
The process of learning, it was very collaborative. So it was about thinking about the things you need to do as a group to work together to make it successful. So assigning key skills with each other, also learning skills as you go too about how best to plan and getting your resources and thinking through the kind of the science of it as well, and the kind of maths of it, and how things are going to work, and how you're going to kind of do. And they also always had kind of ideas. Just think about that first very early one about how they want to do certain stuff that we probably couldn't do, and so trying to work things out. How do you make something fly, or how do you make something feel like a ghost? And we're like, do you know, I don't know how to do it, but we'll just pretend that's what it is, and just have a go at it, and put a bit of string on something, and you know, it felt like a kind of 1950s animation in many ways. And that was the fun aspect. And I think from there, with that same class, we went and did another couple of animations, and there was a kind of real hunger to, I suppose, to develop it themselves and to do other things with it and see where else we could use it in class, and how we could use that as part of our kind of vocabulary and our set of skills that we bring into things. And that, for me as a teacher, then broadened out even in a larger sense and thinking about, you know, sort of visual communication. I'm very into sound, as it were, now, kind of just pure sound. I've kind of gone back to basics, but then I really kind of went all into looking at different ways to tell stories through video, through animation. And this is before apps and before iPads and before these things were really, these days, a lot much easier to put together and assemble. But yeah, just having fun with it, taking risks, and sort of taking brave steps into the unknown together. That's what makes a class exciting.
Yeah, I mean, I think that idea of taking steps together is really powerful. And I guess it can't always be planned, and you've got to follow, to some extent, where the pupils are going and trust them.
I think so. I think I'm a real fan of trying to collect things in a kind of raw state as well. And although you want to have something quite polished, it's, you know, there's a kind of mantra of it's process and not products, about what you do as you're going along. And those wee snippets, or whether it's kids telling stories just orally, or whether you're putting things together, that's the fun part. In many ways, it's like any artist or any kind of filmmaker or songwriter, once they've produced something, they're kind of like, I've done that. They go on to something else. Mm-hmm. And it's a try not to put too much emphasis on the product, because that actually makes it stressful. It makes the whole process stressful, and it makes everyone kind of like, you know, oh, that's not your best work. And suddenly you get all these other layers of pressure, which doesn't help anyone to enjoy learning or to make mistakes and learn from them. And it's really important to just allow them to make mistakes as you do. Mm. I think sometimes as teachers we forget, and I forget, that, you know, this element of play and discovery and exploration is so important in anything you do. You know, you don't just get behind a car and suddenly zoom down the road and you know, effortlessly. You've got to have that period of learning and hopefully not crashing, but of taking things as they come and finding your own way around it with a bit of help. And it's that time that's required, and that ability just to work with each other and find out things yourself makes it really powerful.
Yeah, I mean, I certainly wholeheartedly agree. I mean, I think I've killed a few projects by trying to persuade pupils to polish them in the way that I want them to go, and usually had more success in doing it the other way and following them. But it's it's a difficult thing, I think, to do, is to let go at that point and just let children play and not, because you're showing the result, I guess, and especially in digital media, you very often are publishing it, so there's a sort of nervousness, I guess, about making a good job.
Yeah, I know you're an old dab hand at this, but I've really got into podcasting again.
Mm.
And the reason I like it is because it's unpolished, and it's a bit like this conversation now. We could go back and take bits out that we don't like or think, oh, I didn't mention that. But actually, I quite like that. I quite like the kind of just listening to people and hearing their ideas. And there's this lovely thing called diegetic sound. Diegetic sound is just... it's the sound of background noise, basically.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the sound of nature or just whatever's in the background or urban noise. And I love that aspect of bringing in different sounds and different kind of textures into storytelling as well, and allowing them to find their own way through. And I have to say, I dabble a lot. I've got two kids myself, and I dabble a lot with them and experimenting with when we're out and about telling stories and using different apps and things to let them come out. But the simplest way I find, and it's very discreet, is just to put a microphone where they don't think it's there, so they're not aware of it. I'm very aware that the cameras and video, sometimes they're either performing to it, or sometimes even worse, they shy away from it because it's kind of shoved in their face. And so something discreet, just a simple microphone in your phone, actually is really powerful in capturing the essence of that moment and what happens and how things change or develop in very short spaces of time sometimes, and how wee nuggets of enlightened thought and inspiration come out from the mouths of babes. But yeah, it's great.
Yeah, no, I mean, I'm a huge fan of pupils podcasting in all sorts of ways, you know, in both the pick up a mic and say something, but also the sort of the affordances it gives in children planning things, and you know, there's a whole level of organisation and jobs for everybody and all sorts of stuff in a podcast, and it's slightly less complicated than a video, I think, to make a reasonable job. You maybe notice tonight, if anybody's listening, that we were using this background sound idea. You can hear the traffic going by the road and the rumble of trucks. So the people that have mentioned this before, it's not a fault, it's just us locating ourselves comfortably in the world.
That's a lovely way to put it, John. That's why I like it, because there's, you know, if you're next to a river, if you're in a wood, it's like a classic radio documentary. You've just got that sense of where something is, and it feeds in through a different part of the brain a wee bit, those kind of sounds, and they're quite powerful.
And yeah, we don't know who's listening. Well, I do know who's listening. I just a wee shout out for Byzantine Books, Bill Smith, who is professor of English literature, I believe, in the States, who's listening in, and there's a few other people tweeting about the show. If you have got a question for Athol, stick it in Twitter and we'll try and answer it. If you just use the hashtag edutalk, edutalk, or at John Johnson, or indeed at Athol. And a question which has nothing to do with digital storytelling is, how did you manage to get your first name on Twitter? You must have been on there very early, Athol.
Yeah, I've got my Gmail account is the same, so I've kind of grabbed it. People don't think it's my name, though. I keep getting people thinking, because I don't use it as my name, so it's Mr. M, and they go, mm-hmm. Oh, your real name's Athol. So I don't know what they think Athol is until they find that out. So, but yeah.
It's a nice name from this part of the world. So
it is.
Maybe we could dial back a wee bit to digital storytelling. Have you got a definition of what digital storytelling is?
I suppose I do. I mean, I've got the way I kind of think about it is there's some lovely stuff that kind of stems from Pi Corbett around storytelling schools, and they talk about the importance of starting stories from, you know, oral culture and oral, you know, oral tradition, and for me it's the same with digital stories, that you're either listening to people or you're kind of listening and watching to films or listening to music, and the way that sound is so kind of moving in that sense, in terms of how people tell stories. And it's really kind of the extension of that in terms of how you then develop that sound. You can draw in images, you can draw in still images into the story, or photos or drawings. You can build on skills like storyboarding and comics, and make them come alive by putting them through things like iMovie or Adobe Voice, isn't it called, Adobe Spark, things like that, to make these little stories come alive. You can then sort of, once you've done that, delve more into sound. So looking at music, using that kind of sound effects, and thinking this diegetic thing, thinking about how you can capture things just around you to add sort of layer and texture to the story. And then you can really, I think, delve even more deeply into moving images. So looking at animation, a whole host of different things you can do there, from 2D sort of craft animation or sort of stop motion plasticine animation or Lego animation, through to kind of live action films, even the use of things like puppets and that kind of stuff as well. And just being aware how you can build up stories in different ways. I suppose the digital aspect is really how you record and share them. It's that kind of access we've got of technology to allow us a way of recording these things and capturing them, but also how we share them too, whether it's through video channels like YouTube, Vimeo, or through how we can share them on our kind of school websites or Twitter feeds and that kind of stuff too. So how we get stories out there, and thinking also about who they're for and why we want to tell stories, and who the story is about and what it's about. The more I kind of do this, the more I try and get more personal stories at kids as well. It's more about, as a lead into imaginative writing, it's really about thinking about, well, what is your story? What can you tell me about? What kind of anecdotes or daft things have happened to you? And just capturing them as they go. And if we're out and about doing stuff as well, just rather than trying to get them to explain their learning, it's more kind of to tell a story about what it is they've been up to, and think about things that way. So everything is a narrative, but it's a narrative you can build on and change and adapt and share.
So I mean, obviously one of the big things about storytelling is this sharing aspect, and we're seeing an awful lot more schools and classes come online to share things on Twitter or blogs or video or whatever, or video on Twitter, wee segments of things that are happening in the class. And I wonder, obviously, from your point of view, when you started, it was the children who were telling the story and the children making up the story to tell. And I wonder, do you see that as an important sort of element of this, as opposed to, say, me as a teacher telling the story of what my class is learning, the class telling their story?
Yeah, definitely. I think it's this move away from you being the one person as the teacher who kind of describes everything that goes on, and relying on your voice or your report card or your interpretation of events to be the one that drives the overall narrative. And it's allowing the voice, the pupil voice, to come out in various ways to share that experience. Yeah. Thinking back to an animation did years ago about World War II, in which the kids came up with something called the Catsies, and it was about kind of basically a Great Escape animation where the cats were the Nazis and the dogs were the Allied troops, and they had this kind of whole thing going on about it. And I've not actually read there's a graphic novel called Mouse, which has a similar narrative, and I wasn't aware of it when they were doing it. But so they'd actually come up with a concept which was also a very powerful analogy about and metaphor for the kind of different groups involved within World War II. But so that, that in itself is a really interesting way in which they'd come up with that. And so then, I hadn't told them to do the, I'd kind of suggest, look at different films for inspiration, but they'd come up with that, and so they told their own story about it. Mm-hmm. and unbeknown to them, come up with a really sophisticated sort of model for how to kind of tell the story. But stuff like that kind of always surprises you. So it's always been allowing them to speak, and you've got to allow that voice and that opportunity for them to speak, to be surprised, and to learn from them as well.
I think that's quite wonderful. And that I think as well, that's where the goodness will be, is giving the children as much opportunity. And obviously you're there to guide them, and if they're in a topic that is potentially difficult in any way, of which Nazis and World War II would be, but you can be there as a sort of a lending hand on the side.
I mean, the other animation that was made by another group that year was called The Day Hitler Lost His Head, and it was all about Churchill had sent a dog, a British bulldog, to get Hitler's head and ran away with it, and this was about a headless Hitler running around looking for his head. And so that, in itself, that to me kind of thing, if they don't know about these things, but perhaps there was things like the classic Charlie Chaplin film The Dictator and things like that, but that kind of comedy element about how people see Hitler and stuff. And it's, in terms of technique, it's kind of, it's interesting, but in terms of the actual story, it's hilarious.
Yeah.
So I just love stuff like that. I love that kind of taking a, letting them have a different view in things, and not having it to be totally about maybe where they learned and started from, but it's letting them just give them a bit of a free rein to take it somewhere else.
That's brilliant. If somebody was interested in starting to add this sort of thing to their classroom practice, what sort of advice, what would be a good entry point, do you think, if they've never thought about digital storytelling before? They maybe
I'd encourage them to always start with listening to things and watching things, and using lots of kind of thinking skills and question skills to kind of understand other stories. Whether that's, a classic thing is just looking at all ages, looking at picture books, and using picture books as a source for ones that don't have stories, to things like Tuesday, David Weissner, and great storybooks like that, that bring out loads of ideas, and they have to tell the story themselves because maybe the words aren't there. Classic stories like The Tiger That Came to Dee, where a lot of the story is in the picture, it's not in the words, and so you're looking for them to interpret things in their own voice. Watching films and listening to films and listening to the way that sound works in films, because that's the really unique part about how films tell story too, in terms of how different elements in terms of music and sound effects as well. And a classic thing there is to watch a film without the screen and just listen to the sound. There's some very good examples. There's Through Glow, there's the... I've got the name for now, I'm going to tell this. It's not Scotland Screen, it's the other one.
Oh.
Come back. Screen and Shorts, no.
Yeah, I think you're Screen and Shorts.
So a classic film like Lucky Dip, for instance, which is on there, or Baboon in the Moon, which is a film without any dialogue, and it's just told in music and sound effects. And if you watch that without the screen to begin with, and it's a kind of guessing game. And you're also telling that there's no wrong answer, or there's no right answer, I should say. And anything goes, and you're getting into sequence thoughts through listening to it as well, and just by kind of picking at sounds and trying to guess what the sounds are, and then the next layer is thinking, well, what story could these sounds be telling you? What do they evoke in you when you listen to them? So these sort of activities are really where I would start, by watching and looking at the films, listen to other people's podcasts, and getting them used to that as a habit. That's something that you can do. Probably not used to listening to radio the same way, perhaps. Maybe they are. Depends on their household and things. But listening to stories, whether it's you reading stories, which is I would always encourage everyone to do as much as possible. But even just kind of listening to other people telling stories as well, and thinking how you can adapt those stories or change or add to them, and add in that wee bit of creativity long before you think about maybe trying to capture things they do. I think that's where people maybe rush in a wee bit, is thinking, oh, I'm going to make a film, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that. You need to take a step back first and develop those skills and awareness of the different elements that go into it. Not everything, but just one or two kind of key ones that they know what they're doing when they come to it as well.
Yeah, I guess that's learning the genre almost. I know it's not quite genre, but there are maybe not fixed rules, but there's ideas that are common. And certainly talk radio, I don't think as many people listen to as used to, because there's so many other things, but it's a very good way, I think, to get in because of the almost lack of technology you need to do it.
Exactly, and I think the next step is, I mean, as I say, these days, it's if you do have access to apps, for instance, it's, you know, through you know, some sort of tablet or even your phone, it's very accessible because you've got something to record voice on straight away. They've all got kind of voice recorders. I'm saying they're simple to use, but it depends on the user, doesn't it, in terms of what you're aware of me. But you know, things, there's some very straightforward animation apps and straightforward apps like Adobe Spark Voice and things like that, which allow you to record stories and begin to develop those skills fairly quickly without too much, because they're kind of set up in a very kind of straightforward way, so it doesn't require technical knowledge. Sometimes things like iMovie or Windows Movie Maker require a wee bit more playing time to get around them, but there's certainly lots of other ways I would go in first. And even just using something like SoundCloud or Audioboom to record and publish and begin to share your stories is a great way into it. And we do, I mean, primary schools, we do so much writing your news down. Just record it.
Yeah.
Get them to tell the story.
Yeah.
I mean, I went to my son's parent night, and you know, it was always exciting. He's in P1 to read their news stories, and they were all made up. Every single one of them was made up, and we're like, does he not think anything we do the weekend is any use? but at the same time, it's like, these are great stories.
Yeah.
So that was you know, I loved that. Yeah.
He's not going to be a journalist then. He's going to be, or she is going to be a fiction writer,
or maybe a very good journalist. Yeah.
A long career. So we've had a wee look at digital storytelling, I think, and we could come back to it if there's anything else you want to add. But I really, while you're here, would like to have a word about TeachMeet. You ran at what I thought was a very successful TeachMeet. Was it the week before last?
In
Glasgow, which ran very nicely, and I think felt very relaxed and happy. So maybe I could ask you, where did you first become aware of TeachMeet?
I'm not sure when, but I've been aware of it for a few years, and was basically a classic lurker, but not a lurker in attendance, a kind of lurker in, I can remember kind of, I don't know, pretty much, I think I've only missed one Scottish Learning Festival in its history, and there was always a teach meet around that, and I remember a couple of times signing up to it, but kind of in my own lack of confidence, didn't actually think I could. What would I go and speak about? What would I go and share? What would I chat about? And you know, even it was the 2 or 7 minute sort of nano presentations, but even that felt like an age to consider. And I was seconded to Education Scotland in 2014, and part of that job required a bit more kind of presentation skills and going out meeting people. And so my first one was first TeachMeet was around that time. I went along and bit the bullet a wee bit and stood up in front of people I'd never met before. And to me, it was quite liberating. It was great to hear people just share cross sector, secondary, primary, further education. Everyone was there that night, and just standing up, and people were funny, people engaging, everyone was supportive. There's wee nuggets you hadn't heard before. It was just nice to be in that supportive environment of teachers just wanting to be there because they like what they do and they want to just share a wee bit of what they do with other people. And it doesn't have to be this. And to me, it, you know, also it wasn't this massive kind of wow thing of something that was maybe totally earth-shatteringly innovative or groundbreaking or even dedicated technology. And what was nice about 2 weeks ago was that most of the chats actually weren't about technology at all. They were about things like philosophy and outdoor education and outdoor journeys and lovely stuff like that. So it's just nice to hear other people being passionate about what they do. And so that was kind of my motivation for thinking, well, yeah, I'd like to try and do something to help move that forward a wee bit and encourage more people, hopefully, to start up teach meets and I suppose right across Scotland. It kind of, I suppose, there's a feeling that there's not been that many. There's been sort of one or two happening but maybe not that many. When you look at the kind of, I don't know, it feels like there's a kind of huge swathe of Teach Meets right across England and Wales. And I think we could really benefit from these different spaces to chat about stuff that isn't your local authority, it isn't your Education Scotland, it isn't the GTCS, it isn't SQA, it's not any of these kind of bodies, it's something else, and it's just wherever you want it to be and however you want it to be. And if other people want to come along, great, and thankfully a few did 2 weeks ago, so hopefully maybe one of those will take it next and we'll do other things with it.
Yeah, I mean, as I say, I've been going along to Teach Meets for a long time and was getting towards being jaded about some of the feeling of some of them, and I thought that the one you ran the other day got a very nice feeling, and I think what you said a minute ago, which I've forgotten, so I'll paraphrase, but, you know, I've forgotten the exact words, was, you know, this idea of a lack of pressure and supportiveness. And perhaps you got that because you called this one Teach Me Unplugged.
The inspiration for that, Jordan, was your good self. You put a picture up on your blog, which I thought was wonderful, which is off the first Teach Me, which was the anniversary of 10 years was last night, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was.
At the Jolly Judge pub in Edinburgh. And the image of the Teach Me, so I think if a lot of people are looking at Teach Me and they go on the Teach Me site and see what it is, there's a lot of sponsorship, there's a lot of fairly kind of flashy things, there's keynote speakers, it's less an unconference and feels more of a conference by the minute really in terms of that. But that first picture was basically a group of guys, I couldn't spot any girls, but a group of guys sitting around in the pub with their laptops open with a beer and chatting. I thought, you know, that's a nice image, because not putting it down, but there was a recent Teach Me in London and it felt really glitzy and it felt like a TV show, it felt like a kind of TV chat show format. And do you know, I've been at enough kind of lectures and talks, and that I just want other people to chat as well. I want to kind of chat to folk around me and have a different way of doing it. And I felt, well, that isn't for me. And if it's all directed ironically at the screen, for someone who's talking about digital storytelling, if it's all directed at the screen and through the speakers because they've got headsets on, I'm not chatting. You know, I'm just a vessel that's taking this information in, but, you know, I'm actually going to do stuff with it. Am I going to get real opportunity to share my voice or to kind of chat to other people too? And that's why it was unplugged. I just thought, we'll have a go at, you know, and as I said, and as well, you know, massive fan of Nirvana, so that kind of whole MTV thing as well. Just a different space, and just see if we could do without the technology. I'm sitting here with three bits of technology around me, my phone, my iPad, and my computer. But it's just like, do we need it to have that, to tell a story? Do we need it? Can we just challenge yourself to do it in a different way and however you want to do it? So, that was the inspiration.
Yeah, I mean, I think that, for me, nailed the original. And the original Teach Me came out of that pub, which was called, I think, Scott Edublog's Meetup, which was a name I fought long and hard to keep.
No. Great band names have gone down the...
Well, actually, I suspect most of the success in Teach Me was of the name Teach Me, but an awful lot, once the first one, you know, after that, the first real one came, a lot of it came out of from Ewan McIntosh, mm-hmm. and his influences at that point were from the tech world, but from Barcamp, and the original rules that we put together. I think one of the important ones was this idea of chatting. If you weren't particularly interested in somebody who was talking, you had permission to turn to your neighbour and have a wee chat, not to, you know, disrupt the whole thing, but to be in a space where it wasn't all about the person at the front and them pushing their story, I guess, over everybody else's. And I really felt that, although I don't think anybody had much of a chat while people were talking a couple of weeks ago in Glasgow, because most of the people were talking were real, all the people were really interesting from one angle or another. But you had that relaxed feel that we were kind of all in it together.
Yep.
And it worked really well.
I'm fascinated by why. Sorry, I'm going to put you in this, but yeah. why you thought you lost interest in it? What happened?
Well, it began to be, and I've been as much to blame because I've been half organised some that had the chairs all facing the one way, and got into rooms where that was the, you know, just that shape of a room. With somebody at the front with a big screen demanding that shape demands attention, I guess. And some of the videos and things I've seen from other teach meets where there has been goodie bags by sponsors. I mean, there was an early one where down south where I believe it was almost like a riot with people pushing to get the goodie bags. And it should be the opposite of that, you know. If you get a free beer and a packet of crisps, you know, that's good. That's a good night.
Brilliant.
You know,
brilliant, yeah.
I really feel that the people should come along because they want to present and want to talk. Maybe not present, but talk. And certainly one of the rules that I always liked was the idea that if you went along, you should be prepared to say something. That was one of the original bar campy ideas as well, as you know, people went, everybody had an idea and not everybody got to do it.
Yeah.
Because I remember the very first one in the West, I had spent hours preparing a 7-minute talk, Your RSS from Your Elbow, which I thought was a great title, and you know, was probably of interest to me and one other person, but I was fascinated by this subject. And I spent ages putting a slide deck together and, you know, really thinking about how I was going to present it and all the rest of it. And I didn't get to do it. And that was probably the best thing that ever happened to me. Because I never did that amount of preparation ever again.
Ever again.
And
I always found as a teacher that was my death nail. If I put loads of preparation to something, it was my worst lesson.
Yeah.
The ones where you kind of thought quickly about it and actually went with the flowers where it turned out a bit much better, but anyway, that's another one.
Well, that maybe relates back to what you were saying about earlier, when we take things in motion and turn it into stop motion, and at that point you probably don't have that much of a plan, and following the children is then possible.
I think the other aspect as well is this aspect of participation, and I think it's really interesting that, you know, 10 years down the line, most whether it's any staff meeting or any kind of event you're at or things like that, there's still very little participation really built into it.
Mm-hmm.
And even as teachers, you know, it's really important, I think, to kind of, this whole thing about storytelling is about what opportunity to actually give them to express themselves or to collaborate and participate. And I think, you know, as teachers, we're often, you know, depending on your school and culture, but you're often kind of, you've got a whole day with kids, you've got a whole day of doing things, and it's difficult to find the time to reflect, it's difficult to find the time to properly sort of disengage yourself from the day and kind of process it. And, you know, this is why I think a lot of us turn to things like Twitter and Facebook, because you're back home and you've got that time to chat, look for things and procrastinate to your heart's delight. But there's a real place for the face-to-face, there's a real place for getting together. And I really consider it was a bit of a luxury being on secondment, because I had a lot of time for that real deeper thought and philosophy behind what I'm doing and meeting other people and engaging with other people. And, you know, back in school you realised you just don't have that same time. And so to create that space and that opportunity for professional dialogue, and professional dialogue that's informal, it's not about meeting anyone's demands, it's just what you bring to the table, is really, really important. And so there's a kind of, you know, there's other people, there's the Susan Ward and Fergal Kelly are really trying to kind of engage people with this and moving it forward. I think that's really exciting. And I know it's, in one sense, it's nothing new, but it's a sense, well, it's really good and we should be doing more of it. And And it's not about making people do it, but it's about saying, well, just come along. And what have you done today? You know, don't make it too difficult, and find that space just to say, everyone's voice is valid, like you would do in the classroom.
I think very often we can say, you know, we want to encourage children to talk and have a voice, and then we find it difficult to do it ourselves sometimes. And maybe difficult to forgive ourselves for not living up to expectations or all the rest of it. And I think Teach Me can be a very good place to foster that. There was an interesting conversation in some blog posts around the time that Virgo, I think, started this conversation about getting Teach Me back on track or back on the road in Scotland. And Robert Jones, who's been to a few Teach Meets, sort of challenged by saying, you know, it was impact that counted. And I think he's looking from an SMT point of view, impact on the learners, what impact does it have? And then he came back, I thought, with what I thought was a really good idea, that it was maybe you weren't going to pick up something at Teach Meet that you were necessarily going to take back to your classroom, but giving the people who have the opportunity to talk, it's a step in some professional direction. Where they get their voice and listen to their friends. I just had a slight giggle there because a pie just floated in front of my eyes. John Sexton is saying something about pies out there, and the informality, pie time, role in pie time, informal professional dialogue. I think if you can get the professional dialogue sandwiched in between
the pies,
the tasty crust, that's a great idea, John. But it's the ability to, and that's maybe you're not ready for that at a staff meeting at, you know, 2 minutes after the kids have all gone. It's maybe difficult to have that sort of relaxed informality, but a Teach Me gives you a new,
you know,
space.
It's always the thing where people go, oh, in service day, oh, and why is that? What, you know, or kind of, you know, twilight sessions is the hardest, hardest thing to pull off in the world. Even in your own school, if you're out somewhere else trying to speak to other people, it's a really difficult one, because depending on the teacher, you might have had a really awful day or a good day or just really tired. And so we've got, I think I'm generalising, but I think we do potentially have quite a negative attitude towards the informal times we do get. And as much, you know, it would be good to kind of, I don't know, for that Teach Me kind of formula to seep in a wee bit to the culture of schools a wee bit too, and just change the way we see these slots that we have to chat with each other, because these are organised times. So it's, you know, it's hard to make, you know, you're talking about impact, so how do you make the best impact of those opportunities as well? Maybe a rolling pie would help. That's what we need to do,
and having the time to have a short break and take yourself in a different space, and also perhaps with different people. Because if you know the people and you're working with them next day, it's sometimes hard to say, oh, I've just done this thing and I thought it was pretty cool, when they know you were, you know, sobbing in the back of the classroom after a hard day. So strangers allow you to tell a story in a different way, I guess.
They do. And also, you're not, once you do it, there's no sense of fear, really, I think. It's just a kind of sense of, like, yeah, you're here to listen, and that's cool. It's a funny one, because I don't suppose I really advertise them much to some of my colleagues. I did mention it to some people, but I didn't really oversell it. Maybe it was partly that I kind of wanted, you know, people to come along and hear it, just say, and find different people to hang out with. Maybe that's part of it, actually.
I think it is. I mean, I've certainly noticed that over the years that I've not pushed it in my own workplace, wherever it's been particularly hard. I'll maybe mention it, I'll maybe post it somewhere, but it's more for the people I know online that I would talk to about, which is quite an interesting point.
What's one of the best teachmeats you've been at, or kind of different teachmeats you've been at?
Well, the ones I have been at, I mean, I really did, I think that last one was really good because it was unplugged, and because, I mean, there was a screen, but it wasn't the greatest screen in the world.
Just couldn't see it, yeah.
And it was in a bar, but in an all room off, but there was music going on in the background and things, so it was relaxed, and people were coming in and out with food and drinks and stuff, so I think that's a good attitude. There was a huge big one in the Science Centre in Glasgow after SLF, which I was one of the first big ones, but it definitely had the feeling, because we were sitting in tables and circles, that you could just talk amongst yourselves, and it really felt at that point to me very empowering that we had the opportunity as a class teacher to go along somewhere and stand up and say, you know, well, here's something exciting, and I think I did a 7-minute talk and got every word that I thought of over in 5 minutes because I spoke so quickly because I was so excited or nervous or both, and that was a great one, but they're all different. And ones I would wish to be at, Ian Hallahan had a weekend camping one where they went away and camped for a weekend, you know, that sort of idea I think is really good. I don't know if you've heard, I know some American and Canadian educators who take, it's not a teach meet, but they go away and unplug by staying in cabins and going canoeing and things like that, okay, and going for walks, but they go, you know, they mix it up all the time, so you're going canoeing with one person one day and talking, and then coming back and other people, and then writing something together, okay, at the end, and that's not a teach meet, but it's maybe a nice idea. Maybe we should have a ramble meet. where you know, people just wander about and have a chat, and then, you know, a barbecue or something. I don't know, that would be an interesting idea.
Let's try it.
Yeah, I will maybe have a wee shot at that. I may have a good location for that very soon.
Is that opposed to a bramble meet when you go berry picking?
Yeah, we could. That would be good as well. We could combine the two. I realise, I don't know how long I promised I'd keep you half, it was probably, I said half an hour at some point, and we've run a bit over that, but it's been really enjoyable. And I think what's been interesting for me is the parallels between the two things you were talking about, between storytelling, not necessarily digital, but you know, and something like Teach Me, where what we're doing to ourselves is giving us the same opportunities maybe as we want to give for our teachers. That's a new idea for me, to see that parallel. The way you're treating your pupils, that's the way maybe we should treat each other professionally.
Well,
yes, no. That's why live audio is hard, because of Twitter. We shouldn't watch it while we're doing it. And we'll leave that one. We're not going to explain that one to anybody. So that, if they're listening to the archive for this, you'll never know. But we'll just say John Sexton's to blame.
But just to say, John, thank you very much for having me. And yeah, it's a pleasure. And you know, I have to say that, you know, my own digital storytelling is very much influenced by your own pioneering efforts with blogging and podcasting as well. So these things are, in many ways, thanks to you, your kind of innovations in the field as well. So yeah, brilliant. Thank you for being here.
No, well, it's been brilliant talking to you, Arthur. I hope I catch up with you soon.
Yeah, cool.
I'm going to hang up the mic in a wee minute just to let folk know that the archive will be up in 2 or 3 days, probably. It'll be on edutalk.cc. If you have any other questions or thoughts, you can get in touch with us at edutalker, that's edutalker, at edutalker or at edutalker. At hotmail.co.uk, or tweet myself at John Johnson. Athol's at Athol, which is a nice short, easy one to remember. And your blog is Through the Windy.
Throughthewindy.com, yeah.
Dot com.
Dot com.
So the spelling is like it sounds. And
if I didn't see you through the week.
Yeah. Okay. I missed that one. I was thinking of it as play school, you know, through which window we're going.
Play school as well, but yeah. It comes from Gregor's girl.
When you said see you through the week, I was thinking Van Morrison as well. So
there we go. It's everything.
What a great name for a blog. Now, I had a good fun today, Athol. Thank you very much for coming on.
Thank you. My pleasure.
Well, hopefully people will listen again the next time we're on. Cheers.
Okay, cheers.